Last year in the pandemic, Congress passed a nearly $2 billion economic rescue plan. Now, some of that went to Black-owned businesses. But is this a model to actually close the race and wealth gap in this country? And how much do federal programs like this actually address systemic injustice? Turns out McDonald's is an interesting case study. In the civil rights movement, the Big Mac company worked with the government to encourage African Americans to buy local Mickey D franchises. Historian Marcia Chatelain wrote about this in her Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Franchise, The Golden Arches in Black America. Here and Now's Tanya Mosley talked to Chatelain for her podcast, Truth Be Told.
The relationship you had with fast food growing up, and McDonald's in particular, it was more than just about food. Some of your foundational cultural experiences actually came through McDonald's.
Absolutely. So McDonald's, I often tell my students, before the age of cell phones, is where we would all kind of gather to get going. So for me, going to a McDonald's was about my adolescence and my independence, but it was also a gateway to learning a lot of Black history. The first time that I read a serious piece of Black history in high school was because the local McDonald's franchise organization, Black Franchisees, had sponsored a quiz bowl called Know Your Heritage. And so I read about the Great Migration. I was learning about, you know, the city of Chicago. And I think years later, when I was training to be a professional historian, I thought that was such a strange entry place. It wasn't that I was learning Black history at school. I was learning it through this program from McDonald's.
Yes, I mean, as part of your research for this book, you asked this question: how did McDonald's, this largely suburban fast food restaurant, become such a mainstay in urban, primarily Black and brown communities? And what you found is that it actually started during the civil rights era and the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah, you know, when we think of Dr. King's assassination, we think of the gravitas of the moment and the confusion and the outrage people had over his loss. And I think very few people really understand that this was an entry point for people to start thinking about Black-owned businesses as a solution to the distress that people were experiencing. And so after King's assassination, there was a call for Black capitalism, more Black ownership of businesses, and the McDonald's Corporation seized that moment to start recruiting Black franchise owners in predominantly Black neighborhoods. And so in this really weird way, when we think about all of the visible signs of King's legacy, that entry point is a really important part of it, because it's one of those initiatives that has actually lasted longer than some of the more important goals of the period: fair housing, equalization of access to schools, the end of police brutality. We didn't see that, but what we did see was a corporation aligning itself with this idea of Black capitalism and being very successful at it.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I've heard you say that you've enjoyed most with the publishing of this book are the memories that people tell you about McDonald's. I've been thinking a lot about this, and I will say one of the most salient memories in my life was wanting to have my fifth birthday party.
Absolutely,
to be there.
Yes.
I wanted that so bad.
Yes.
I never got it, by the way. I mean, there is a lot of nostalgia wrapped around our experiences with McDonald's.
Absolutely. And I think that it's important. You know, there is, I think, a segment of the population that says, well, McDonald's is cheap food. It's fast food. It's the food that, you know, poor people eat. So what could be so interesting about it? But, you know, rarely do we have common experiences within our culture that people have an entry point for the idea of it. And I think for, you know, restaurants that are in predominantly Black areas, you know, the presence of a McDonald's is an extension of the influence that the franchisee may have. It may be a marker of the places where people in the community can actually get jobs and not fear job discrimination. You know, it can be all of those things, and it can be problematic, and it can be, you know, a sign of some lack of choices in terms of nutritional diversity in people's diets. It can be all of those things, but I think it's really dangerous to sell it short and to not imagine that something like fast food can be really meaningful to people.
Right. I mean, you also write about this empowerment for Black franchisers, this idea that you could build Black wealth to help communities. I mean, this is a flawed idea. And it also came with a price. Every franchise of McDonald's is not created equal.
Absolutely. I mean, part of what happens in the late 60s and continues into the 70s and 80s is that Black franchisees inherit stores that white franchise owners did not want anymore. They were in neighborhoods that they didn't want to do business in, and they were often managing stores that had shoddy equipment and buildings that had property damage, and the carrying costs of doing business in a lot of those communities were higher. So they're paying higher taxes, higher security costs, higher insurance. And so you start to see this kind of two-tiered system within a system that is supposed to make people a lot of money. And the thing that I think is really poignant is shortly after my book came out, a group of Black franchise owners sued McDonald's. And the claims that they were making were they were being redlined into only Black neighborhoods. And so they had to compete with not only other McDonald's restaurants, but the other fast food brands that have come into those communities, that they weren't getting the support that they needed from McDonald's, and that the system of discrimination that led Black owners to create the National Black McDonald's Operators Association in 1972 was still happening, you know, decades later. And I think that it's a real reminder about the limits of this kind of wealth building to try to mediate racial injustice. Because a lot of people did become very wealthy and very successful as a result of franchising, but it all comes at a cost. And so I think it reminds us that we have to be really vigilant when policy solutions are only geared towards wealth building or business.
You know, I've been thinking a lot about Black liberation and what nourishment means for us, both in the external sense, what we need for community building, and also the more basic understanding of nourishment in the way of the self, like the foods we eat and the media we consume and the messages we internalize. And it has always felt to me that in many ways, McDonald's is this contradiction. It's linked to good memories, as we've been talking about. And it's also seen as junk food and a lack of nourishment. I'm curious how you see it.
You know, I think McDonald's is a mirror of our society's promises and its failures. And especially when you look at the case of what, you know, what people hoped McDonald's would do in Black communities. Give people great jobs, provide endless opportunity, provide wealth for reinvestment. And these things cannot be done by a corporation. These things need to be done by communities with support from a robust federal system, is my perspective. So what happens is, you know, there's all of this weight of promise. There's all of this, like, weight that this thing is going to make all the difference in our communities, and it doesn't happen. And so I think the disappointment that Black business didn't liberate people, it didn't give them, you know, that kind of freedom that they were seeking, was not only disappointing, but then it's confusing because so much of the rhetoric, even today, and so many resources go into this idea that Black business is going to fix it all. You know, I find it really poignant that during the George Floyd summer, one of the loudest responses wasn't, you know, an end to police brutality. And it wasn't, you know, better jobs and more opportunities for people to get treatment for drug addiction. It was, you know, buy from Black creators, support Black business. And the idea that Black business would then be weighted to right the wrongs that killed George Floyd is impossible, but it's also, you know, really upsetting to think about. But if you remember, you know, the summer of 2020, that was a lot of the framing, that was a lot of the takeaway, that was a lot of the investment. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, McDonald's may not provide food that can give long-lasting nourishment, but I think that the fast food industry satiates something in us. And I think that it's the desire for there to be easy answers to our social problems.
You view Michael Brown's death and the role of McDonald's in Ferguson as a bookend to 1968. Can you say more about that?
You know, watching Ferguson unfold as someone who spent so many years in Missouri as a student and spent so much time after my life as a student in Missouri, it was affective in so many ways, but one of the things that I thought was really fascinating was the ways that McDonald's in Black America was initiated by racial unrest and chaos, and the ways that McDonald's appears in the background of the continued chaos of our nation's racial unrest. And so watching the Ferguson McDonald's in the background as reporters were doing stand-ups and as people were organizing, you know, getting a text from a friend that she had been tear gassed and, you know, ran to the McDonald's to see if she could put milk on her face. Like, seeing that in the background, it made too much sense, because McDonald's in Black neighborhoods were supposed to solve the problem that brought them there. And here we were, you know, nearly five decades after King's assassination, and McDonald's is one of the places that is still able to stand in this moment of unrest. And so, you know, that for me was confirmation that this was the book I needed to write.
That's Marcia Chatelain, Pulitzer Prize winning author of the book franchise, The Golden Arches in Black America. For Here and Now, I'm Tanya Mosley.